Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. Of course, this is 1080 AM radio, been around for almost 50 years, starting on September 27th of this year, and now the 95.1 FM. Kind of an overcast day here in Northfield, Minnesota. Boy, if you're listening to this years from now, let me tell you that we just had a heat wave. Temperatures got up to over 100 degrees over the weekend. And finally, it's cooled off. It's 66 degrees in downtown Northfield as we broadcast live from our studios. My guest is a guy that graduated from high school in 1965, and I'm going to be playing some bumper music from that year and see if he and I can identify the music. Well, speaking about my guest, let's get going. We have a gentleman by the name of Glenn Castor in studio. And Glenn, I introduced you to Jeff Johnson, and I found out that was not necessary. You've been in that seat before.
Yes, I have. Roughly over the last year or two, I've been on the fire board for the Northfield Area Fire and Rescue Service. So after board meetings, I come in, and Jeff finds out what went on.
Okay. Now, when I say fire department, I think of the one on Highway 19 and Highway 3. I remember when that was built, and it was the fire station as well as the Northfield Police Station. But we now have a new Northfield Police Station, and the entire building is going to be occupied by the Northfield Fire Department. And I'm also familiar with the Rural Fire Department because of my friendship and relationship with Jerry Anderson. And I know he works very hard on getting the dollars that are necessary to keep the trucks running for the Rural Fire Department. So you're with both of those or just the city?
Well, it operates as one fire department and no longer part of the city. So the Northfield Area Fire and Rescue Service is an independent municipal organization in Minnesota that serves Northfield, Dundas, and the Rural Fire Service Area.
And now, if I remember correctly, at one time, the city administrator, and of course with the city council, kind of removed the leadership or potentially removed the leadership of the fire department and tried to make what was a Northfield police chief a Northfield safety director and had control of the operation of the police department and the fire department. Did that happen, and did it work out?
Well, it did. It did happen for probably a little over a year and a half, there was a director of public safety. That was the former police chief, Mark Taylor.
Mark, yeah.
So he was responsible for overseeing both the police department and the fire department. It was a little bit of a rough time for a volunteer fire department. I think while Mark was a good person, he wasn't too used to running a volunteer organization.
I'd have to say, yeah, I think, you know, Mark was a very good police chief and very involved in the community. And I had that feeling that he was uncomfortable to work with a unit that had been around for decades and decades and had run their own operation and had their own people. And they had the cream of the crop. They'd have 10 applicants for one position. And during that period, I had talked to some of the folks on the fire department that I've known as a friend outside of the fact that they were people that were putting out fires, and they weren't happy at all. And I invited one of the individuals to come on in and chit-chat about what their thoughts were in regards to that. And they didn't want to stir the pot, so he did not come in and discuss it because there was ongoing negotiations. Were you involved in that particular time, that era of the fire department?
Well, that whole situation is what sort of started moving us toward where we are right now. At that time, I was a supervisor in Bridgewater Township. I didn't know anything about the fire department, really. But I started hearing the same things you were alluding to. People were unhappy. It's a volunteer organization. Unhappy volunteers find other things to do. And pretty soon it isn't a volunteer organization. We're paying full-time firefighters, which gets very expensive. And that was my concern as a supervisor, for the townships, our budget for fire could easily double if this were a full-time department. So started looking into it and finding out what some of the issues were. And then, you know, much to the credit of the two cities, Dundas and Northfield, they, together with the Rural Fire Association that Jerry Anderson was an executive of, agreed to put together a task force to study what should we do with the fire department. And they put, between the three of them, about $30,000 into the pot so we could pay for some objective assessments. And that eventually led to this fire department we have now, which is formed under a joint powers agreement of the Rural Fire District, Northfield and Dundas. But it is not; it is no longer a department of the city.
That's good, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's working well. Any new organization has rough spots when it gets going. We had ours. We probably still have a few rough spots to deal with. But we set some priorities. The first thing we needed to do was deal with morale, deal with how volunteers looked at the organization and get them back to where they wanted to be there.
Yeah.
So that was step one. Step two was to update the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
We had some awfully old equipment, and that's largely been done. We have one truck left, which was purchased in 1987. It's the green pumper, and that'll be replaced in 2019.
Yeah, there's something going on right now to raise the dollars, isn't there?
There's a project with the rescue squad going on to raise money for the heavy rescue truck. And that's another unique thing to Northfield, and a wonderful thing, is that the rescue squad, all the firemen are on the rescue squad, but when it goes out on a rescue call, which means the big blue truck and the ambulance, those people aren't paid. It's strictly volunteer. Since 1959, the community has raised the money for the rescue trucks through the VFW.
You know, when you say that, all the firemen on the rescue are on the rescue squad, but all of the members on the rescue squad are not members of the fire department.
Yes, they are.
Oh, now yeah. It's 100% both ways?
It's 100% both ways.
Well, then that's been a change.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So if anybody wants to join, they're going to get a lot of training.
That's right. That's right.
I'm from the era when the, I'll never forget it, somebody got a broken leg right on Bridge Square, and they had to wait for the hearse to come.
Yes. I've heard of those days. I wasn't here then.
And so that's what, but, and then I'm proud to say there used to be a group in Northfield called the JCs.
Mm-hmm.
You heard of them?
Oh, yeah.
And they did a whole lot for the community. And one of the things they did is, I think, was the first modern rescue unit, and raised the money maybe not all of the money, but mm-hmm. a lot of the money, and then presented the rescue squad with their own unit.
Yeah.
And that's many years ago.
That was a big event.
But it was because I seem like probably in 75, right in there.
Uh-huh.
So how did you, you're from Bridgewater Township, how did you end up on this particular committee or board? You know, I should tell people just tuned in whom I'm speaking to. I'm speaking to Glenn Caster from Bridgewater Township here in Northfield. Bridgewater Township here in Rice County. Okay. So how did you get on that board?
Well, that it was persistence about solving the problem. So talking with Northfield city councilors, talking with people in Dundas and other townships. So it was just a matter of if you're persistent and willing to carry the ball, you end up on the team.
Did they need a representative from Bridgewater Township, since it, I believe, the biggest township in Rice County?
No, it wasn't specifically from Bridgewater. So our representative on the Rural Fire District is Paul Liebenstein. So he was on it. I was a member, and Jerry Anderson. Those were the three rural.
Okay.
We had two city council people, Eric Osweifel, Rhonda Pownell, and then one citizen from Northfield, Lee Runsheimer, and then the mayor of Dundas, Glenn Schweitzer. So that was the group that originally looked at, we have a problem, how are we going to solve the problem with the fire department?
Did you have a representative from the fire department on that committee?
Not as a voting member.
Okay.
No.
So did they want one? Did they feel like they should have been on one?
I don't think so. I think we were thoughtful and careful about including Gary Fronick, Jeff Mahacek, Tom Nelson in the conversation. So they always knew what was going on. We always knew what they thought of our ideas.
And of course, you just mentioned the leaders of the fire department in Rush's Garden. One of the things that will be interesting to see what ultimately ends up being a completed fire department building, and that has always been somewhat controversial, particularly because it's so close to the river. And there was flooding in the basement of the safety center in the past. And tell me what the plans are on the fire department. I'll give you an idea. What I think is that they're going to have a drive-through so that they can enter the fire department after a fire and park their trucks rather than have to back them into the unit. Is that going to happen?
No, they've gotten very good at backing trucks.
Yeah.
So that we'll keep doing that. Today, in fact, if you go by the fire department building, you'll see a crane out there, and they're taking down the communications tower on the south end of the building. So the construction is starting. The asbestos has been largely cleaned out of the basement, and the walls are starting to come down there. The main issue with the building really is it's too crowded. You know, when it was built, you mentioned, and you remember in 1971
when it opened. 71? Okay. I always thought it was 70, but
70, 71 it was built, and I think in the fall of 71 is when it was occupied. But at that point, the fire department had three pieces of equipment, three trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we've got eight.
Mm-hmm.
And when we buy a new pumper, we pay extra for it because it has to be shorter so we can fit it in the building. We can't just buy a standard chassis. So we pay a price in a number of ways for it being a little too crowded. So we're adding about a 4,500 square foot area onto the south side of the building, which is essentially a garage. The basement is being floodproofed. And you'll see eventually a berm go up around the basement, and the garage doors won't be there anymore.
And the garage doors on the east side of the building?
On the east side will disappear.
Will the downstairs be used?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, what we found is interesting. The water that had come into the basement was groundwater, not river water. But the groundwater flows under the building into the river. And when we get a flood, it backs up. And if the sump pumps aren't all working, we have a problem. But that's all been addressed in the planning for this remodel of the building. So the basement will be used for a boardroom and a training room.
Is that that's where the gun range was at one time?
That's where it was. The firemen don't need that.
So. Yeah. It stored a lot of bicycles down there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did they still do that?
Well, since the police moved out, they moved out in the summer of 2014.
Okay.
So it's been fairly empty down there.
Okay. So it's pretty exciting. I know that you're getting a new piece of equipment. One of the things that I just like to share, if I may, John Mahachik was the fire chief, and I think Ed Miller was the assistant fire chief back when they got their first truck with the big...
Oh, the big lift in 1993, yes.
Yeah, it might have even been before that.
The platform.
Where you could put a bucket way up in the air. And I got a ride on that with John Mahachik, and we went up as if the roof of the central building was on fire on the corner there where Rare Pair is, and that thing goes way up.
Yes.
And then when it moves out sideways, you keep thinking the truck is going to flip over, you know? Well, then they have these big platforms that they automatically put down. Is that truck still in use?
No. We replaced that truck in the summer of 2016.
Oh, I wish I could have had a chance to say goodbye.
Well, you could have bought it for not very much.
Yeah, what's the deal on that? When you usually see small rural towns using equipment that is older, and including this town would buy used equipment from the bigger fire departments in the Twin Cities, for example. Is that how you negotiate new equipment?
Not generally. So when, in 2016, we replaced the rural pumper. That's the truck you see go out to every fire. So we bought a new truck then. That was about $550,000.
Gee whiz.
And at the same time, we had had the truck you're talking about, the platform, inspected. And there were a number of problems with it. And it was going to cost us something on the order of $40,000 to $50,000 to fix those problems. So we looked around for a used truck there, and we were lucky enough to find one. So in that case, we found a truck that was built in 2004, moderate use, mostly as a demo truck for the builder. And we bought that for about $360,000.
Pretty good deal.
A new one would have cost us about $1.2 million.
Yeah.
So, but it's the type of truck that we need to protect a historic downtown. That's really what it's for.
Yeah.
Is
fight fire from above and
that's
et
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So, where does the equipment that you are replacing? Where does that go?
It gets sold.
To a small town?
Well, I think the rural fire pumper, when we replaced that, that went to a town in Wisconsin. So we just let the word out through various people. This is available. Ed Miller is one of them. And we had a town that was interested, and they bought it. The platform truck, when that went, I think the city put that up for auction. And I don't know how much it sold for, $12,000 or something.
Oh, gee whiz.
See, you could have had it.
Well, some people that are into,
Yeah.
That would be one heck of a buy.
It would be.
It'd take a little space to park it, but that's interesting. Were you, as a young boy, into fire trucks, to go to the fire department and climb around trucks?
Before getting involved in this, I knew nothing about fire trucks or fire departments.
Were you put in that position because of your role with Bridgewater Township, or did you have to get voted on by the committee?
No, it was mostly because I was a supervisor in Bridgewater, and I was very active in saying we need to deal with this issue.
Speaking about dealing with an issue, I have to deal with the fact that this show is sponsored in part by the Quarterback Club in Northfield, and Dale Finger, owner, operator, graduated from Northfield High School. It's a real, honest-to-goodness hometown restaurant, the Quarterback Club. Have you ever been there?
Oh, yes. It's a wonderful place to eat
and
visit.
What do you eat, order?
I'm a hamburgers and fries person. Most of the day, and pancakes in the morning.
Yeah, they make great pancakes, waffles. They mm-hmm. have breakfast until 10 o'clock each morning. So, folks, you still have about another 36 minutes to get over to the QB, the Quarterback Club. They are waiting for you to stop in and order something delicious. The Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street, right here in downtown Northfield, Minnesota.
Are you looking for spacious senior living in Northfield? Feel at home at Northfield Retirement Communities, Northwood Pines. Available for individuals and couples, this assisted living combines the privacy of one-bedroom plus den apartments with family-style meals and care available around the clock. Visit us online at northfieldretirement.org or call us today at 664-3466. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Syngenta Seeds of Stanton knows that one of the biggest events in the lives of many area high school students is graduation. They wish the Cannon Falls and Randolph graduates much success in the future. For all your seed needs and crop protection, contact your Syngenta dealer.
Music from 1965, ladies and gentlemen. Our guest this morning is Glenn Kester. Glenn, this was the 10th most popular song on the pop charts of Billboard in 1965.
This diamond ring doesn't shine for me anymore.
Who was the group?
Pardon me?
Who was the group?
So you know the name of the song?
Oh, yeah.
What's the name of the song?
Diamond Ring.
That's right. Put it like this, his dad had raised millions and millions of dollars over the Labor Day weekend on TV for many years. His dad did.
Jerry Lewis?
Yeah.
Oh, Jerry Lewis and the Playboys.
It's a correct, almost. Gary Lewis
and the
Playboys.
This diamond ring can be
something beautiful. I like that song. 925 on 1080 KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota, the home of cows, colleges, and contentment. My guest this morning is Glenn Kester. He's a retired individual. He's a Bridgewater supervisor. In addition to that, he's on the committee that works with the Northfield, the Greater Area Fire.
Right.
What's the official title?
Northfield Area Fire and Rescue Service.
Okay. Well, I was close.
You were close.
Yeah. Okay. And we talked about that. Okay. Let's talk. Have you ever been in a fire? Have you ever had a home burned down or a garage or your car or anything?
Well, let's see. About 2 weeks ago, we had a grass fire at our place. You know, one more person who gets a burning permit and says, well, I'll do a little more, and the wind changes, and we have about 80 acres, and most of it's in conservation reserve or reinvested in Minnesota, so there's a lot of grass to burn. It caught on fire and started going, and so I've got myself and my wife out there with a rake and a shovel, and we're not going to stop it. And one of our neighbors, Lonnie Slinger, stopped by, drove into the driveway and looked around and said, well, this really doesn't look under control to me. And we called the fire department, and they came out and took care of things.
And grass fires are done on purpose in some cases. Because
well, this one wasn't on purpose. But, yeah, usually we have Zumbro Valley Forestry comes out and burns 10 to 20 acres
spring. Whereabouts in Bridgewater Township are you? I live in Bridgewater Township.
I'm just off of 20, about halfway to Faribault.
On the north side or south side? That's a crazy road.
It is. It twists back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, it says that it's south, and it does go south eventually, but mostly it goes southeast.
Right.
Okay, so...
So if you're going down 20, you go past the new parking area for the Cannon River Wilderness area. That's on the right side of the road.
Wow, is that before Treehoffs?
Yes. So
is it closer to Faribault or Northfield?
It's close. It's about 3 miles from Northfield.
Okay, how far from the tower, that FM tower that's out there?
We're about 3.5 miles from Menards.
Okay, and I'm about a mile.
Right.
Okay,
right.
So. Okay, 80 acres, that's a lot of acreage.
It's maybe too much for a retired person.
Yeah, I mean, is it tillable? And
no.
No?
Okay. No, it was all in the reinvest in Minnesota.
You must be down by the river.
We're close to the river.
Yeah.
We're just on the, immediately on the east side of 20, and there's a little pond down there you go by. We have part of the pond.
Well, I've probably been by it a thousand times.
You have been by it many times.
Yeah. All right. Once again, our guest this morning is Glenn Castor. Let's talk about Bridgewater Township. What made you decide to get on the township board?
Well, when we moved here in 2004.
You're just a rookie.
I am a rookie here, absolutely. This was a move for people who had... our married life, we've always lived in cities or on the edge of cities, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and Minneapolis. We moved from a suburb of St. Paul.
Which one?
Roseville.
I used to sell shoes in Roseville.
Oh.
And I also managed a drive-through restaurant called Henry's on Larpenteur and Lexington.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were within probably 4 blocks of you.
All right.
So we moved out to the country. My wife does pottery, and we needed a place we could build kilns and so forth.
Build them or use them?
Well, we built a small wood-fired kiln, and we have a gas-fired kiln that we use. It's out there.
That wood wants work, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially getting the wood ready is work. So 2004, we came here, and our coming here coincided with the proposal to put an ethanol plant in Bridgewater Township.
Oh, yeah. I remember, that battle. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's a new person coming in. I go to a couple of town meetings just to go. What is this about? And as it happens, one of the things I had done between retiring in 2001, 2002, and when we moved here, was working with a partner on financing some alternative energy projects. And in the course of that, had come across the person who was the CEO of the ethanol company, Rivas Stevenson, and just scratching my head, wondering what is he doing here. So I got quite involved in assessing whether this made any sense for the township, and my own feeling at the time was this is a very the ethanol plant they were putting together several was financially a shaky deal. It was mostly debt financed by a group out of Kentucky, and it wouldn't take much for it to turn belly up.
And it was a sweetheart deal for them.
Oh, yeah.
And if I remember correctly, one of the promotional marketing strategies was to say that it would employ 64 people and make that, ooh, attractive. 64 is a great number.
Yeah.
And then it was learned that these plants can be operated by two or three people once it's up and running.
Yes.
And the 64 were actually people that were building it. So that was a...
There's a bit of bait and switch there.
Yeah. And the people whose land they wanted probably were disappointed because they offered them a great deal of money for their land. And then when it didn't go through, obviously they didn't buy it. But, I mean, how can you say no to somebody that's giving you more money than your land is worth?
Well, part of what convinced me to get involved in this was a group of farmers here, none of whom I knew, but they had signed a petition in opposition to the plant because of the way it would use water. And I thought, well, you know, these people know what's going on here, and if they feel it's not wise from an agricultural perspective, and I look at it and it's not wise from a financial perspective, it's worth getting involved in trying to put the brakes on this.
Yeah, that water issue was very, very important.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember how the, you know, they said that they would recycle that water.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, that wasn't going to happen. And they would be using more water than they have finished product without a recirculation. This is off the top of my head. I'm not sure. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, that's close enough. I mean, it was going to cause problems, and problems nobody needs.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell you about something the Defeated Jesse James Days Committee is doing. And I also got some messages here I want to pass along to you. We're taking a break with Glenn Castor as my guest here this morning.
Congratulations from Kenyon Ag Services to the Kenyon Wanamingo graduates for all the achievements in and out of school. Continue to do your best. For all your ag needs, contact Kenyon Ag Services in Kenyon.
Elite Auto Care.
Here's the difference.
So I had to leave town to go to a funeral, and I wanted to get my car oil changed, so I chose Elite Auto. And there was also some looseness I had in the front end, so I was a little concerned about that. And it turns out I needed lower ball joints. Because of the chaos of the funeral, I actually didn't plan ahead. And so these guys actually rushed parts in, because they stayed 2 hours after closing time. That's customer service. That's the kind of guys you want to do business with.
That's the Elite Auto Care difference. Open 6 days a week, 517 Water Street South by downtown Northfield, and online at EliteAutoCareMN.com.
Hi, I'm April Kopak, manager at Three Links Apartments in Northfield. We are an active, independent community of older adults and disabled individuals. Our spacious one-bedroom apartments feature controlled key access, off-street parking, and are handicap accessible. This is a place to call home, make new friends, and participate in many activities and exercises. Tours are welcome. Please call Three Links Apartments at 664-8850. Or find out more at threelinks.org.
Never close your eyes anymore.
Another big hit from 1965.
There's no tender.
Can you name this tune?
Oh, I recognize the tune. I even forget people's names these days. So we'll see if I remember this in a little bit. So you've got me on this one. Oh, I recognize the song.
That's the title. You Lost That Loving Feeling, done by the Righteous Brothers.
Yep.
You remember
Oh,
that.
Yeah, the Righteous Brothers.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair, broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Northfield, Minnesota. My guest this morning in studio is Glenn Castor. I just got a note, Glenn, and this is from, I don't know who sent the note, but let's do it. Defeated Jesse James Days is going to be, the group will be at Froggy Bottoms, And they're going to have a meat raffle. You know how that goes, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have bingo at 7 o'clock. And the coverall pot is up to $1,000. How about that?
Well, that should be a good evening for people.
You ever played bingo?
Oh, yes.
How about during Defeated Jesse James days with the fire department?
No, there's usually other things for me to do those days.
Okay. So just a little plug. I've been on the committee. This is my 51st year on the committee. And I like to take advantage of the airwaves here and do a little promotion for them. Defeated Jesse James days at Froggy Bottom tonight. Meat rifle at 6, bingo at 7. Coverall pot is at $1,000. It is already 22 and a half minutes before 10 o'clock. And by the way, for those of you that may handicap, you don't have to go down the spiral staircase. You can go right through the patio, just to the left of the main door as you face the building. So we're talking to a guy that's on the the Northfield Area Fire Association, something like that.
Yeah, Northfield Area Fire and Rescue Service Board.
There we go. Yeah. And you live in Bridgewater Township. We established that. Speaking about that, you know, sometimes it's hard to figure out whether you're in Dundas or whether you're in Bridgewater Township because of the way the thing is.
Yeah, the two are somewhat tangled up.
Yeah.
Together.
And I'm wondering, how are those people in that big development on the south side of County Road 1, how are they getting to that their homes? There's got to be 35 homes back there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. There's a little access road going out of the development now to a gravel road, 115th Street.
Oh, okay.
So they go out to 115th Street and bump along the gravel and get into Northfield or Faribault, wherever they're headed.
Have you taken that trip?
I avoid the road.
Okay.
I've taken it.
I know the detours create a lot of traffic on 20.
Yes.
And you got to get to the, Radar Hills, what they used to call it.
That's right.
And I'm wondering if, what am I wondering? I'm wondering if, I know, there was a fellow that was on my show many, many times, Erling Kingdom, and he just passed away in the last year or so. And he was a very knowledgeable Second World War guy. Now, I'll get to the story. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that happened is that he was on national television. He and his next-door neighbor, he lived in Farmington in single dwelling homes, and the little boy next to him was cuter than heck, and Kingdom would play with this little boy, and he'd use his lawnmower, riding lawnmower. Then the little boy had one, and it was a wonderful relationship between a 85-year-old and a 5-year-old or whatever. Anyhow, the people moved to Northfield from Farmington. Just a little thought. Erling Kingdom, a lot of people remember him. So let's get talking about our guest, Glenn Castor. He's kind of a rookie here in town, but got involved. And do you belong to any clubs or organizations?
No, just the supervisor in Bridgewater Township. That keeps me busy in the fire association.
How did you get elected? How many opponents did you have?
In the first election, there were two other people running. So there were three of us.
And who were they?
Bruce Moreland.
Uh-huh, my neighbor.
And Mike, I'll remember his name. He's also your neighbor.
Oh, yeah. He
was the secretary on the board.
Yes.
yes.
I know. It'll pop into my head.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice guy.
Very nice. Yeah.
He way ahead of everybody in computers and stuff.
Yeah. So
Piper.
Piper. Mike Piper. That's right.
Okay.
So the three of us.
So did you have a runoff to eliminate one?
No. We were all three on the ballot.
Okay.
And so the one with the most votes is the one that's elected.
So you never knocked on my door.
Probably not, but I knocked on a lot of doors.
Yeah. I ran for county commissioner one
year. Oh, okay.
So I know how much work that can be.
Yeah.
So you didn't come up into our neighborhood at all? Are you figuring that Mike and Bruce had that tied up?
No. Maybe I missed your house, but I knocked on a lot of doors and because I was new here. So why vote for me?
Okay.
And it's been enjoyable. I'm glad I ran. There's times when it's quite frustrating to be a township supervisor. You know, there's very little leverage with either the county or the state in dealing with issues, which can be pretty frustrating sometimes.
Well, I thought township, which we call grassroots level, I thought Bridgewater Township had pretty much of a clout and an impression on federal and state agencies that can assist in doing things because of the river and all the other amenities that Bridgewater has.
Well, we're maybe we have a little bit of clout, and maybe they have a lot more clout.
Okay.
I mean, in the last year, 2 years actually, one of the projects we undertook had to do with flood control. So, as you know, on the east side of the township, we have a creek, Spring Creek, that when we get a rain, 4-inch rain, for example, it just washes down and into Northfield and creates a huge problem for people in the southeastern part of the city, Fargays Meadows. So in 2013, after several years of these rains, we had a town meeting, and what are we going to do about this flooding? And we had some very unhappy people there, justifiably unhappy. And
is that right off of 19, south of 19?
It,
the area you're talking about?
It's off of 246.
Oh, okay. Not on 22, is it?
It's 22 and 246 where they come together.
Yes, and they dug that huge...
Yes.
I drove by there. I wondered, what are they doing? And if for those of you that don't know what we're talking about, if you go south on 246 and you go past County Road 1, immediately there's a right-hand turn,
right.
And you take that right, and then you go down, and on your left, you'll see water drainage, and then you'll see a big pond, then you'll see a large area of ground, and then you'll see a new building that is sitting there that they built even during the winter. And what is that? What's in that building?
Well, we'll start with the pond.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Then we'll get to the building.
Let me finish. I actually stopped and talked to one of the truck drivers and said, what's going on? And all he knew is that they're moving ground. And they took the ground that they took out of there, they piled it on the south side of that little road, and I assume that they used that to build a berm and or use the good soil for their crops.
What was happening there started with this meeting in 2013. In our township meeting, we had people from Fargays Meadows.
Which is where?
That's a neighborhood in Northfield, southeastern Northfield. So it gets flooded by Spring Creek when we have these large rains. Spring Creek runs right through it. So we had, I think there were about six people there from Fargays Meadows and said, we're desperate. Can you do something here? They were a bit frustrated working with the city at that point. Eventually the city did do some work there that helped them.
Can you help me and others listening Exactly where is Fargays?
If you know where the soccer fields are.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. If you go southeast of the soccer fields, just a little bit, there's a residential area.
Yes.
That's Fargays Meadows.
Okay. Well, okay. And that stuff down on 22 is affecting them over there.
That's right.
Okay.
So Spring Creek comes into Northfield immediately west of Fargays Meadows.
Okay. Do the soccer fields flood also?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So in the township, we were motivated to try to do something about this. So we wrote some grants. We got some money for studies from the DNR, engineering studies. What options do we have in dealing with Spring Creek? And eventually we ended up with about $1.2 million from the DNR to dig that pond and do some other things. So that's the origins of the pond. It's made as a holding pond to slow down Spring Creek when we have heavy rains.
Well, I've gone out there in the past, and that creek, I mean, she was fast.
Oh, yes.
And furious and deep.
Yes.
And now since that pond has been built, the runoff seems normal.
It's gentle.
Yeah. I was surprised. We got a lot of rain one time, and no effect. And then the snow melt off.
Yes,
I was surprised there was no big running. So evidently, it worked.
It works. And then the farm you mentioned on the south side—that's Becca Carlson has that farm. It's called Seeds Farm, and we raised up the level of the north side of Seeds Farm
because high.
That was flooded also.
Yeah.
And lots of problems for her, and I think we've solved a lot of those.
So did some of the earth that they dug out for that pond, it was good black earth.
Yes.
Did they spread the property south of there and then build the berm with the clay and the other stuff that was left over?
We didn't build a berm. We just raised up the land about 3 feet all the way back.
Okay. Well,
and then the rest of the dirt that took about a little less than half of what we dug, and the rest of it was hauled up to a farm, Mark Bauer's farm off of 20.
What are they, that building, really, I haven't been inside of it, but looking at it, it's so different.
It is.
What is in there?
Well, she Becca raises vegetables that she sells wholesale, typically. So she's selling to school systems and restaurants.
So organically grown?
I don't think it's a registered organic farm.
Okay.
But in spirit, yes.
Okay.
And then, so the building, part of what the building is for cleaning vegetables. So you have to have, if you're going to supply to certain institutions, the state has rules on how you handle things. And she didn't really have that capacity before. So she has a place to clean and store vegetables now. And in addition, I think there's a little apartment in there and so forth. I mean, yeah, it's a very nice building.
Well, yeah, and I was wondering if there was living ability in there because it's big enough to be a home, but it's flat on the north side.
Well, I think... Her mother, Nancy Carlson, is a painter, and I think she has a studio in there.
Okay.
And
they're raising chickens anymore?
No. So they rented space to the Main Street Project initially for raising chickens, and now the Main Street Project has its own own farm out in Greenvale, I think.
Yeah, I say north of Fury. Okay.
Yeah.
We have to take a final break this hour on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Once again, our guest this morning is Glenn Castor, and I'm peppering him with questions about his job as a supervisor for Bridgewater Township and the fire department. He's on the committee for fire prevention or firefighting, and we haven't even got to, hi, how are you? Nice weather we're having. Where are you from? We'll be doing that next on KYMN.
It's time for the class of 2018 to turn the page and start the next chapter in their lives. And KYMN 95-1 is proud to team up with Capital Construction and REMAX Advantage Plus in Northfield to bring you the live broadcast of the Northfield graduation ceremony. That's this Sunday, June the 3rd at 2 o'clock on 95.1 FM, AM 1080, and streaming at kymnradio.net or on your mobile device on the TuneIn Radio app. The Northfield High School Commencement Ceremony, brought to you by REMAX Advantage Plus and Capital Construction, this Sunday on KYMN. Founded in 1866, Carleton College is an independent and highly selective liberal arts college with a diverse and exceptionally able student body, a talented faculty whose first priority is teaching, and a continued commitment to the liberal arts. Carleton is a national college enrolling approximately 1,900 students drawn from all 50 states and 27 different countries. For more information, go to www.carleton.edu.
Capital Construction is Northfield's premier locally owned exterior construction company. As a locally owned company with the majority of their employees having graduated from Northfield High School, Capital Construction would like to salute all of the area graduates. You've put in a lot of hard work and your future is bright. Call Capital Construction for all of your exterior construction needs. Whether it's replacing damaged siding or roofs, upgrading to energy-efficient windows and doors, or just giving your home an upgraded facelift to make it stand out, Capital Construction can help you give your house the exterior it deserves. Call them today for a free consultation at 952-222-4004 or check them out at capitalconstructionllc.com.
Get out of my room!
It's my room, too.
Why are you always in my business?
Are you always a dummy head?
Good one.
Mom, Lauren sarcastically complimented me.
Mom, Emily's on my side of the room. Mom, we can't share a room any longer.
Stop complaining. I have to share a room with your baby brother and your father.
Is your family in need of more space? Let Professional Pride Realty in Northfield help guide you through the process of selling your current house and finding the home that is right for your growing family. Professional Pride Realty, providing good information so you can make good decisions.
Heritage Dental Care in Northfield is a general dental clinic specializing in a variety of dental procedures and services. Make an appointment today with Drs. David Brust, David Buck, Bo Stanley, or Michael Thompson. New patients and emergencies welcome 5 days a week at Heritage Dental Care.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio.
So the danger here, Wayne, is that I start singing along.
Yeah.
Sugarfly Honey.
There he. I just sang the title.
Yep.
Do you remember who did it?
No. Tell me.
The Four. The Four.
Seasons.
The Four Tops. All right. Sugar Pie Honey Bunch or whatever. Hello, I can't help myself. Big, big hit in 1965, ladies and gentlemen. We heard from the Righteous Brothers, Gary Lewis and the Playboys, and now the Four Tops and plenty more to come next hour. Once again, our guest is Glenn Castor. He is on the Northfield Fire, Rural, and all that stuff, and also a retired gentleman, and new to Northfield. You've been here since when?
2004.
So that's 13 years, 14 years.
14 years.
Yeah. Okay. Do you still feel like you're new, or do you feel like a townie?
No. We moved into a wonderful neighborhood. As I mentioned, we live out in the country, but we get together often. and a very nice group of people to be around.
So how did you discover, let's talk about that. How did you end up in Northfield? Because you mentioned Washington, D.C., and you mentioned Chicago, you mentioned the Twin Cities. How did you end up in Northfield?
Well, when we were living in Roseville, we moved to Roseville in 1985.
Now, we is you and your wife?
Me and my wife.
Okay.
And we have two children. And mid-90s, she got interested in pottery and then spent several years working up at St. John's with Richard Bresnahan. And at that point, she was ready to do pottery more seriously.
St. John's?
College.
Okay. Because we have the St. John's Church here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, up in Collegeville.
Okay.
And so she got interested in doing pottery more seriously and wanted her own kiln. You can't really do that in the suburbs. So we started looking for a place to build a house, and we actually started on the north side of the Twin Cities, closer to Collegeville. And looked, and somebody mentioned Northfield to us, saying not only is it a wonderful town for the arts, but it's a wonderful town for people to buy pottery and so forth. The college is here. So
who were the friends? Were they former Northfielders?
No, just some people we knew up in the cities.
Okay.
Who suggested it. So we came down here and liked it. And then we started looking for a place where we could buy. We were looking for maybe 10 acres. And we happened across this piece of property that Dennis Sutter owned, which had to be sold as one unit because it was close to 80 acres, 76 acres, because most of it was in a conservation reserve program and you had only one housing site on it. And it's a beautiful piece of land. So that's what we did. We bought that.
Now, there's a benefit, isn't there, from the federal government in regards to that kind of property that says you cannot do anything other than let it be natural?
There's a financial benefit to the person who puts it in the reserve program. So all that went to Dennis.
Oh, okay.
When we buy it, that doesn't continue to us.
And it's not irreversible?
No.
I mean, that's your 80 acres, and you can't do anything with it. Maybe grow crops if it's
can't grow crops or graze animals on it.
Okay, you can't.
No.
Okay.
So we have lots of pheasants. We have deer. You know, most of it's in prairie grass or oak savanna.
I am so glad you said that because the other day I actually saw a pheasant, and I haven't seen pheasants for years. When the studio was out where the tower is for KYMN, we used to hunt pheasants there. And things just disappeared for a while. I'm glad to see they're coming back.
Well, when the house was being built, my wife and I were the laborers on the house, but a couple of the carpenters would bring a shotgun out and lunchtime is
go
on a pheasant.
All right. It's 10 o'clock. We're going to take a break for the news, all right?
Mm-hmm. Fine.
Our guest this morning is Glenn Castor. We will be back after the news on your radio station. This is KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 AM, The One, 95.1 FM.
Saving the summit, recusal reprimand. I'm John Trout. A top North Korean official, Kim Jong-chol, is headed to the U.S. for talks planned in New York aimed at salvaging the summit between nations.
He will be the highest ranking North Korean official to go there in some 18 years.
There's Paula Hancock's Russia says Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov will travel tomorrow to North Korea for talks. A new published report in the Russia investigation hints at possible obstruction of justice.
The New York Times is reporting that in March 2017, just days after Sessions did recuse himself, the Attorney General found Mr. Trump would not take his phone calls. So he flew to Mar-a-Lago, looking to get the president to sign paperwork on the travel ban. Instead, the Times reports the president lashed out at Sessions for not being there to help protect him from the Russia probe. And all this may be a line of obstruction of justice inquiry for the Mueller investigation. Bob Costantini, Washington.
Rocket exchange between Hamas and Israel overnight has resulted in a ceasefire after rockets were fired into Israel. Correspondent Phil Black picks up the story.
Israel blames Hamas, but also says Iran had a hand in this recent dramatic escalation, and that's through another militant group called Islamic Jihad.
Police in Lexington, Kentucky respond to a large explosion at a UPS freight hub. Jason Wells is the city's fire battalion chief.
The cause of the explosion was emanated from a truck and trailer inside of the maintenance facility. That truck had acetylene tanks on it.
Reports say the blast was felt inside nearby buildings. 12 people are reported injured. Roseanne Barr shows no signs she will remain quiet about being fired from her ABC series.
Barr undermining her own apology with a torrent of retweets from fans, portraying her as a victim of a liberal double standard.
There's entertainment reporter Brian Stelter. I'm John Trout.
Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota, 95.1 FM. The one streaming at kymnradio.net. That's all one word, kymnradio.net. And we are streaming around the world. My guest this morning, Glenn Caster, he is a supervisor, that's the right terminology, for Bridgewater Township, also is on the Northfield Area Fire Board. And we're just chewing the fat here. Last comment we had was when they were building their home, when some people, workers came out, they brought their shotguns so they could go hunting on the 80 acres that Glenn and his wife bought after living in various different places. And your wife is a potterer or a potterest? How do you say that?
I say a potter.
A potter. Yes. Okay. And are you? Do you ever try it?
No.
Is it really, it looks easy, but is it hard?
It's hard for me.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to buy what I make.
Well, I just thought it'd be kind of fun to get your hand in mud and, you know, spin it and all that.
That part of it's fun.
Okay. I have a nice set of pottery at home that might be valuable. It was valuable as a gift, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to look at it. I have it on display, but I think the potterer name and all
is
that
is probably on the bottom of it.
Yeah. So, anyhow, we figured out how you got here, but where were you born?
Bellefonte, Pennsylvania.
And
it's a little town in the middle of the state near State College. My father was a professor at Penn State University at the time.
Oh, okay. And how far from the campus did you live?
I have no idea. I was very little then.
Oh, okay. So you weren't there very long, is it?
No, I think I was less than two when we moved.
What did your father profess?
He was a psychologist.
Go figure. Okay.
Yeah, so his career ended up, he worked in state hospitals in Idaho and in Iowa.
Okay, so you moved around a bit.
A little bit.
Do you have no memory of the one in Pennsylvania?
No.
Where did you move to from there?
I grew up mostly in Idaho.
Idaho.
So Blackfoot, Idaho. At that time, there were state mental health hospitals in most states. There was one in Blackfoot. That's where he worked.
Now, that sounds like an American native name.
Blackfoot. It is.
Okay.
It's a little town, maybe 5,000 people, on the Snake River in the southeastern Idaho.
Southeastern. Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I think of when I think of Idaho?
either Salmon River or Hell's Canyon. I don't know.
Coeur d'Alene.
Oh, Coeur d'Alene, yes.
You live a great distance from Coeur d'Alene.
Right, right.
Because that's right up in the northern tip. Beautiful. Just beautiful going through
there. Oh, it is.
Yeah. So your dad worked at a state. Is it legal? Is it politically correct to say mental hospital?
Well, that's what it was.
Okay. A state mental hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do you have siblings?
Two sisters.
Are they younger or older?
Younger.
And what is your youngest, your right after you, who comes?
Janet comes 2 years later, and Carolyn was 3 years after that.
Okay, so Carolyn is 5 years younger than you. Okay. All right, there we go. Now, as we converse, your dad works at a mental institution. Where did you live? Did you live in the community of Blackfoot, a city?
Yeah. I mean, Blackfoot was, apart from the mental hospital, it's a small agricultural town. It was maybe at the most 5,000 people, a couple of streets, mostly potato farming. So when school would start in end of August, and then 2 weeks later, we would get out for 2 weeks.
Really?
And to pick potatoes.
Did you do that?
I did that for 2 years.
Now, income for yourself, or did your folks had land that they planted potatoes?
No, I did it so I could buy model airplanes.
And do you remember potato bugs?
No.
You know it?
What I remember is getting up at 5:30 in the morning, and you go down and with a group of people and stand in one area in town and with a lot of migrant workers. And the farmer would come along and say, you know, I'll take you 20. You get on a flatbed truck and go out to the field and work for the day.
Was there a lot of competition?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean,
every time you went there, you got into a field.
I got into a field, but the competition was I'm an amateur potato picker, and farmers are looking to get things done and get things in, and the migrant workers they're picking to eat. I mean, it really matters, and the whole family is out there. They're much more efficient at what they do. So there were more than a few times I was told to pick up the pace. You know, I was 11, 12 years old at the time.
Oh.
And
What was your job? I mean, physically, what did you literally do?
Well, at that time, there was the way that the potatoes are picked by hand. So there was a cultivator that would go through, turn over the soil, so the potatoes are laying there in the soil. So you pick them by hand, put them in a bucket. Then when the bucket's full, dump it into a sack, 100-pound sack. And then somebody comes along and swings the sacks up onto a truck. So that's what the day is going down rows of potatoes.
Was the pay pretty decent, or was it...
The pay was about 10 cents per 100-pound sack.
They actually weighed it and...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you had to pick it up.
No, I didn't pick it up. Somebody else picked it up.
But you had to pick up your picking.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so what's the most you ever did at 10 cents a set?
I don't remember. I just remember being paycheck. Awfully tired at the end of a day and awfully thirsty.
What was your paycheck like?
It wasn't very much. It allowed me to buy a few model airplanes, you know, these little Revell things that you put together.
Did the migrant workers have quarters that you could see and visit if you wanted to? Where did the migrant workers sleep? And
most of the farms had houses for them. I mean, they're the ones that make the farm work. If the migrant workers don't come, the potatoes don't get picked. So they had places to sleep and cook.
Well, you see many documentaries about slave labor, if you will, and that could be a potato picker, and mm-hmm. you hear about them living in shanties that have no running water, no electricity, or if some, it's very archaic. And I'm wondering if, when you were a kid, if you recognized the fact that you're getting paid X amount of dollars to buy a balsam plane, and they're doing it to put food in their tummies.
I was aware of the difference at the time, but I really didn't know how they lived or moved from place to place and so forth. I was more attuned right adjacent to Blackfoot as an Indian reservation, which was part of our school district. And I had friends out there, so that was more the type of living I was, different from ours, that I was learning about.
How different was it?
Most of the Indian friends I had lived on marginal farms. I mean, the land there is semi-arid, so it's fairly flat, but it's a desert. So a challenge to raise anything but potatoes. There's some wheat farms and so forth farther west.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a hard life for a lot of people.
Did you have any feeling when you went shopping and you saw that these are Idaho potatoes, which of course the state is known for, is Idaho mm-hmm. potatoes. Did you ever feel a little bit of a pride when you would go shopping in Washington, D.C., and they'd have a sign saying Idaho potatoes?
Well, it was nice to know at one point in my life I had a more intimate connection with the potatoes.
Yeah. Well, like when I buy Scotch tape, my family worked at 3M.
Mm-hmm.
And so 3M I kind of own in my heart, because of the connection. All right, it's 14 past 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on. Actually, I'm wrong. It's almost 15 after. So how long did you live in Idaho?
I think we moved when I was 13.
Okay, ooh, years junior old. High.
Yeah, so that was a move to Mount Pleasant, Iowa.
Was that which traumatic was a experience for a kid that's in junior high? Leave all your friends?
I managed. I mean, it was leaving friends, but Mount Pleasant, Iowa is another small town. It's quick to make friends.
Well, where's Mount Pleasant, Iowa?
In the southeastern corner of the state, near Burlington, north of Keokuk. And
okay.
So forth. So
southeast out.
Yeah, maybe 30 miles from the Mississippi River.
Okay.
And there was another mental hospital, state mental hospital there.
Was that close to Nebraska?
No, it's on the eastern side of the state.
Okay.
South of Iowa City.
All right. Oh, all right. So what did your dad do at the mental hospital? Did you ever go with him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, our home served as a halfway house for a number of people getting out of the hospital. So it wasn't unusual for us to have somebody living with us who was on their way to doing something else in their life.
You know, when you get the impression, when you say a mental hospital, you get the impression of people that can't function very well and, look different, talk differently, may have some form of physical impairment. But would most of them be, when you saw them, just look normal except they have psychiatric problems?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, probably 90% of the people there, when you walk in and walk around, you talk to people look normal and so forth. But I thought of it at the time and still think of it as operating more like a holding tank. I mean, at that time, drugs were heavily used to sort of sedate people or for depressed people, pump them up a little bit. You just get used to it.
Did your dad talk psychology at home with you and your sisters and talk about what he does?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He talked pretty freely about it, and we all understood that none of this goes outside the house.
Mm-hmm.
And he also dealt with a lot of people in the community in essentially private practice. So, you know, you're in a strange position as a kid in high school to know, well, you know, the guy running the clothing store down here, he has some awfully strange habits. And you just keep your mouth shut and move on.
Was his private part of his business in your home?
Some of it was, yes.
Okay, so kids stay out, Jim's coming, and, you know.
Well, there was some of that, and then every week, every Thursday night, he would have a session in the house with maybe 15 or 20 people would come.
Wow.
And these are all people with issues of one sort or another.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of the meeting was learn how to listen to other people and learn how to talk to other people. And I sat in there with everybody else. And if I said things I shouldn't say, I was told to be quiet. or encouraged to think a little more before I spoke and so forth. So it was quite an interesting way to grow up.
I often wondered what parents that are psychologists or psychiatrists, how they discipline their children, how they figure it out, how they can have children that do not do the normal things children do when it comes to messing around, you know what I mean?
I think my father was wondering that, too. Here I am in this profession, and my kid still does these not-so-bright things.
Yeah. What was, when you did something wrong, I'm from the era where spankings were considered normal, and I guess you call it corporal punishment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, nowadays, to be correct in everything that you do, I would imagine that it has to be something that is non-physical and still make a mark. So how did your dad, if you got caught smoking, let's mm-hmm. say, or something like that, how does a psychologist take care of his kid in a way of learning a lesson?
Well, different psychologists probably handle it in very different ways. I mean, he was never one for corporal punishment because he didn't think it was effective. But he always knew how to push people's buttons. And that was one of the first things he did when he met somebody was learning how to sort of get your blood pressure up, and he would use that pretty effectively. And with a teenage kid, it doesn't, you know, you don't have to be too insightful to know what gets them going.
All right. Now, did you went to Mount Pleasant High School?
Yes.
All right. What were your interests in high school? You know, whether it was speech or theater or music or football or baseball, what did you do besides take the credit courses?
Well, several things. We had a debate team. I was on that for 4 years. I was on the track team. You know, it's a small high school.
Yeah.
And That was pretty much it, I think. I sang in some musical groups and so forth.
Now, do you remember your first bicycle? That's one of the questions I always ask. And your eyes your eyes are lighting up. Tell us about your first bicycle.
Well, the first bicycle was in actually in Idaho. A big yard and plenty of room to run around and fall over and learn how to ride it.
You recall what color it was?
It was a red Schwinn.
A red Schwinn. Yeah. My guest yesterday had a red Schwinn.
Yes.
Did it have a horn on it?
No horn.
Okay. Nope. My guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair is Glenn Caster. If you just happen to be going across the dial, either 95.1 or 1080 AM, and you're wondering, who are these people? Well, it's called the Wayne Eddy Affair, and I talk one-on-one with people, and we talk about anything and everything. It's just a fun show going down memory lane. Right now, we've got Glenn Caster, went from Blackfoot, Idaho, to Mount Pleasant while he was in junior high, and while he was in high school, he did a little track. What did you do?
I did a slow half mile.
A slow half mile.
That's right.
Okay.
I was frustrated by one of my friends, Dennis Deal, who drank and smoked and ran faster than I did.
Yeah, I can see where that now, did you do any other sports besides track?
No.
Okay. I always ask this question. There was a moment in your career as a track guy that something happened you did or someone else did that you'll never forget at a track meet. What's yours?
Mine was generally I was running a half mile in about as I remember, two minutes and 8 seconds, 2 minutes and 10 seconds, and in one meet, things just worked. I mean, I've played tennis a lot, and you get to feel in a zone, and you just block everything out, and everything works. And running under 2 minutes and winning a race was a big event, which didn't happen again.
I was going to say, what if you tried today? What music were you involved in?
We had a lot of choral music. So there was a quartet and a double mixed quartet, and we competed in the state, and the quartet won a prize.
So, now, when you say quartet, I'm thinking barbershop. Is that different than
it
that?
It wasn't barbershop.
Okay.
But it was four guys.
You didn't do Sweet Adeline?
Nope.
Okay. Were you a tenor or a bass?
A bass.
A bass, okay. Yeah. Did you have to try hard to be a bass?
No.
Okay.
No, it came pretty naturally. Reading music was difficult.
Yeah.
But just follow what the other people do.
You went to state competition and won, huh?
That's right.
Boy, get a trophy, ribbon, medal?
We got a medal and a little trophy.
Can you have that someplace?
Somebody has it. I don't.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? You go through your stuff and say, oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
So the debate. I was on a debate team.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that really, really caught my attention by the teacher was, here's the debate. I want you to know both sides of it. I want you to know both sides of it, because when we get into this debate in the classroom, you don't know what you're going to do, pro or con. Mm-hmm. So be prepared. Did they do it that way with you?
Yes.
Okay, well, then that's the way they do it, huh?
Well, it was then. I don't know what it is now.
And you have to do a lot of research.
Which I'm sure has changed a lot with Google. And
oh, gosh. Can you imagine how easy that would be, comparatively speaking?
Yes.
Instead of going to the library and getting books and getting quotes and getting statistics, and so you can argue both
sides.
That's
right. That's changed a lot.
Did you enjoy that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. And again, we would travel around other teams in Iowa.
Sure.
So it's a big event.
Ever get up to Mason City?
We got up to Cedar Rapids.
Okay.
On a regular basis, Des Moines, Iowa City, Ottumwa.
Ottumwa.
Yes.
I like that name. Ottumwa. Glenn Castor is my guest this morning on KYMN Radio. You're listening to The Wayne Eddy Affair. I think I'm in my 13th year doing this before doing 35 years when we were located out in the country. Great to be right downtown Northfield and see what's going on. And Glenn, when you were in high school, did you do theater at all with your singing background? And
No real capacity to be an actor or sing on a stage.
Who was your commencement speaker in high school?
I don't think we had a commencement speaker. We just had the valedictorian
do the thing.
Do the thing.
All right. Yeah. What jobs did you have in Iowa when you were in high school?
Well, immediately after high school, I worked one year at the mental hospital where my father was and where my father worked. And
So you didn't have any jobs while you were in high school?
No, I had a girlfriend who lived on a farm, so I worked for her dad.
Oh, okay. Did you get paid?
I was free labor.
Okay. Oh, free labor. Okay, just to be near the girl.
Just to be near the girl.
The farmer's daughter?
And he knew it. He knew it.
So, as a kid, you had some in because your dad worked at the mental hospital, and they hired you. Now, there's more than psychologists working there. What job did you get?
I was an attendant, which meant sort of the lowest grade help.
Yeah.
One of the things that I still surprises me when I think back about it was that attendance. We gave drugs to people. We gave shots to people. It just doesn't seem like a wise thing to do.
For a kid just out of high school.
For a kid just out of high school. And I remember at one point on the admissions ward, a woman coming up to me and looking at the medicine tray and saying, "I think you've got her medicine wrong." And she was correct.
Oh, boy.
So that was something of an adventure.
Could you befriend the patients?
In the sense of talking with people and getting to know them, sure. But it was, it's a strange place to do that. I mean, one person who was probably at the time 4 or 5 years older from me, I got to know a little bit. I come into work one day and find he's killed himself.
Ew.
A mental hospital is a different place to work.
What was the physical layout? Was it dormitory style?
Well, it was wonderful grounds. I mean, really well kept. When it had first started, it had a farm with it, and they grew a lot of their own food and a place for people to work. But it's a dormitory. So you have wards at that time, locked wards, and dorm single rooms down the hallway.
So were some of the people there in confinement through a court system as a miscreant or a thief or a murderer or whatever?
Some were in there through the courts. Some were in there through their families. A family could sign a person in, and there you are. You don't have a way to get out. And some people signed themselves in.
So it's a locked situation.
Most of it is, all of it. Okay.
Does it still exist?
No. Okay. It's been converted to a prison.
Yeah, but just kind of like Faribault.
Yeah.
Right. Were most of the kids in your graduating class parents associated with the mental hospital and farming?
No, because there's also a small college. There's Iowa Wesleyan College.
Oh,
there.
Okay.
So some of the people taught there. A lot of the kids were from farms in the high school class. I'd say Mount Pleasant was probably 8,000 people.
All right.
So there's some other things.
As a young boy in middle school and maybe high school, did you ever protest the Vietnam War or see one, the students at the Westland?
No, I've recently thought about that a lot. So the Vietnam War obviously is going on when I graduated in 1965. I go through college and don't actually spend a lot of time thinking about it. And then I was drafted when I finished college.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look back, I think of the five top people in our high school class, four of us were drafted. And a number of other people. We had quite a few people go. And it just seems to me one of the disconnections in life that I should have been paying attention.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I was drafted in 64,
mm-hmm.
and really wasn't aware of what would have happened if they accepted me.
Yeah.
So you took a year off before you went to college?
No. I 65 I graduated, and then that fall I started college and graduated in 69.
Okay, so you really were a four-year student.
Right.
Which isn't the case nowadays in
no.
many.
No, but it was then it was much more common.
What college?
Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania, near Philadelphia.
Swarthmore.
S-W-A-R-T-H-M-O-R-E.
Swarthmore.
Yeah, it's a small liberal arts college like we have two of here.
Did your dad teach there at one time? Or
no.
Why did you choose that?
My mother went there.
Okay.
That's why I chose it.
Really? Okay.
Pretty much.
Well, an alumni gets a little discount.
I don't think there was a discount, but I think there was preferential policies for accepting.
So it's
children.
Small. How small is the?
I think about 1,000.
So more like Carleton than St. Olaf in regards to population. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what did you major in?
Well, and I started in psychology, which was a mistake for a couple years, and then switched to mathematics, which is the degree I got.
Well, in mathematics, everything is black and white.
It's wonderful, yes.
You're either you're right or you're wrong.
Or you're not smart enough to do it, which is the case every once in a while.
And I'm trying to think how math would be beneficial to a psychologist. I mean,
I don't think it is. I mean,
okay.
It was just... you grow up around something, mm-hmm. in my case, psychology, and you think, well, that's a natural direction to go. And it turned out to be not the way my brain was wired.
I enjoy meeting psychologists, but in the back of my mind, I always wonder if they're trying to figure me out. And did you, as a kid, ever feel like your dad, because of the profession he was in, knew what you were thinking?
Oh, I knew he knew what I was thinking. And I knew my girlfriends reacted to him just exactly the way you described. I mean, they knew that he knew what they were thinking, too.
Was that an asset or kind of a, you know, blockade?
I would say it was a liability.
A liability. Okay. Speaking about liability, we have to take a break, all right? We are talking to Glenn Caster. Who's he? Well, I'll tell you what, he's a retiree that moved to Northfield, Minnesota, and his wife is a potter, and he is a gentleman that we're going to find out worked in what after majoring in math. But first, we have this important time out.
The time has come for this year's graduating class to step into their future. The Realtors and staff at RE/MAX Advantage Plus in Northfield congratulates the class of 2018 and wishes you the best of luck in the next chapter of your life. When it's time to graduate to a new home, look no further than RE/MAX Advantage Plus in Northfield. Let their experienced Realtors help you every step of the way. Call 507-301-0600 to set up a free consultation today.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, Northfield, Minnesota. A friend you can count on, and 95.1 FM. Glenn Castor is my guest this morning. Glenn graduated from high school from Mount Pleasant, Iowa. And Glenn, I'll tell you what, this could be a theme song. This is the number six song of the year 1965, the year you graduated, and I think you'll get the name of the song and the performer immediately, because we could dedicate this to your father's profession, all right? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, count me down. Say one, two, three.
One, two, three. Let's hear it.
I need somebody, help, not just anybody.
Oh,
you
yes.
know, I need someone.
Here's the Beatles, huh?
When I was younger, so much younger than today, I never needed anybody's help.
Yes, good music then and good music now.
I like it.
Yep.
This, by the way, number six on the pop charts, Billboard, 1965, top ten. Beatles have another top 10 hits. Did you like the Beatles?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
On the ground, won't you please, please help me?
We're back with Glenn Castor. Glenn, you went to this little school in Pennsylvania because your mom was a graduate there. You thought that you wanted to maybe follow your father in the footsteps of being a doctor of psychology. And then you discovered, I don't really want to do that. So you took a course and majored in math, which is a wonderful discipline, because it's so logical, and like I say, you're right or you're wrong. There's nothing in between. Were you preparing yourself to be a math teacher?
No. The first job I had, I graduated in 69 from Swarthmore. I spent 2 years in the Army after that. I was drafted. And came out and shortly got married and worked for several years in Chicago.
Well, Vietnam era. And
yeah.
You got drafted. You were 2S for 4 years. And in the minute you get out, boom, they grab you?
That's right. So I graduated, I think, first week of June, and I had a draft letter the third week of June.
Isn't that something? And so you responded to a draft board in Mount Pleasant?
They had already told me I was going to be drafted.
Okay. Did you take any ROTC courses while you were going there?
No. Swarthmore is a Quaker school.
Okay.
It doesn't have ROTC.
That associates you with Nixon, the ex-president.
Yeah, wonderful.
Wasn't he a Quaker? Yes, he was. So, okay, I graduated from high school in 1960,
mm-hmm.
and I got drafted in 1964, right after I became available and was not a student. And I was somewhat naive. Went through the draft process. Did you?
Well,
go through?
Yeah, I mean,
bend over and
you're
cough.
You're drafted. You do what you do. And
so you got drafted. Now, with your college education, Did that make you a second lieutenant right away, or did you
No.
have to go and earn rank in the Army? Did you get in the Army?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what was...
I think you had to almost not be able to think to
so
not get
what,
in.
So where did you go with the first assignment?
Well...
boot camp.
Boot camp.
Where?
In Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri.
And what was that like? You were a track star, so, well, you were...
I was in decent physical shape.
Yeah,
that
right.
That made a big difference.
Okay. And you're there with a wholly different culture of people.
It was a mixed culture, because there were a lot of college students who had been drafted. So I think it was maybe as hard for the Army as it was for us. They're not... They weren't used to having people who picked things up quickly and so forth.
So when you're going through that disciplinary time, I should say, mm-hmm. and you got the drill sergeant, you got to get up in the morning, you got to dig the hole and all of that, and you're side by side with maybe somebody from Texas or Alabama or New York City, totally different, the accent and work ethics. You were exposed to that for the first time in your life, but with that mental institution that your father worked at, perhaps you were able to learn to work with diversity.
Well, you're all thrown together, and you're all doing the same thing, and you all depend on each other. So it doesn't really make too much difference what the background is. I mean, what I discovered, what made a huge difference was whether people considered one another to be honest and trustworthy. And otherwise, it really didn't make any difference.
When you went on the forced marches, did you hold up more so than other people because of your track background?
Probably so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but again, it's a very mixed bag. Some people aren't in great shape, but you don't leave them behind. You help them along, and because the situation is going to be reversed sometime.
Yeah. Glenn Castor is my guest. He lives in Bridgewater Township and has lived here since 2004, I believe you said.
That's right.
And... he's a supervisor on the Bridgewater board, and in addition to that, he's on a committee that helps the area of Northfield in the fire department. That was
yes,
fire department. And we're right now in the middle of talking about boot camp, and you. When did you get your first rank? I mean, you were the first time.
When you go in, you're a private making $140 a month or something like
yeah.
that. So at the end of boot camp, I volunteered for officers training.
Oh, okay.
Because that's several more months in this country before being sent overseas. So I went through officer's training, and in the artillery. And
did you pick that, or did they place you there?
They placed me there, and that's probably the one place where mathematics made a difference.
Okay. Because of the degree and all that.
Because artillery has a lot of calculation in it,
mm-hmm.
and so it was a natural place to be. So I went through that along with many other college students, and we all had the same thought. So we came to our last few weeks when we got our orders, and we resigned as officers. And so at that point, you become a sergeant. So officer training school,
yeah.
The rules are the Army cannot kick you out unless you do something really bad.
Okay.
But you can quit anytime. And if you quit, you become an enlisted man again. with the rank of sergeant.
Well, can you walk away when you quit, or do you have to finish out the 2 years or whatever?
Oh, you have to finish out the 2 years.
Okay. And
but the issue was is you get your orders, and if you're a forward observer, which is what I would have been, your life expectancy is not very good.
A forward observer during the Vietnam War.
Right.
Artillery.
Yeah.
With cannons.
That's right.
What size?
The ones I worked on were, they look like tanks. They're 155 millimeter guns. And they look like tanks, but the armor is not very thick.
Okay, and so through conversations with many individuals, you graduate from artillery school,
right,
and automatically get a second lieutenant ranking, and that would have given you almost direct orders to go to Vietnam.
It did.
So you say, I don't want to be an officer, I quit, but I'll finish out my 2 year commitment, and I will be a sergeant and stay in Germany, or
no, they can still send you overseas to Vietnam.
Okay. All right,
but you go as an enlisted man, not as an officer.
Well, as a grunt.
Well, you go as a sergeant in the artillery, so it's a grunt, but it's a much less dangerous position than as a forward observer.
Okay, so
a forward observer goes out with the infantry.
Okay, the foot soldiers. Okay,
and you're looking for targets.
Okay,
and generally it's you and one other person who's out in front,
and going through the jungle.
Yeah, somewhere.
Okay, and then that forward observer has to figure out the distance that the bomb that they're going to shoot out of the cannon should go. And did you have like a compass and do it that way, or do they taught you? You didn't do it, but did
usually
they teach
you? Usually use a map.
Okay.
Or sometimes you do it from an airplane, a Piper Cub.
Okay. Oh, Piper Cub. That'd be shot out of the air pretty quick, couldn't it be?
Bullets go through it, and it doesn't fall down.
As long as it's...
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take another break. We'll be back. This is interesting. Glenn Caster is my guest here on KYMN. Why do you think your name has an E on the end of it?
It used to be spelled differently, and what I was told was my grandfather changed the name in 1917. He was German, and living in Pennsylvania at the time, running a little general store. And because he was German, the family was run out of town. So he changed, it was Kostur was the original name. And so he moved to Uniontown, Pennsylvania, and changed the name to look more Italian.
Yeah, that's why the E's there.
That's why the E is there.
Okay. We'll be right back with our guest on the Wayne Eddy Affair.
Selfless service is the guiding principle that drives Army National Guard soldiers to be always ready whenever disaster strikes. They are your next-door neighbors and your colleagues in schools, offices, and factories. To be a Guard soldier is to stand ready to serve at all times for family, for community, and for country. To learn more, log on to NationalGuard.com or contact an Army National Guard recruiter in your area. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
It's hard to believe that this year's Kenyon Wanamingo class is graduating. It seems like yesterday when you were getting on the bus for the first time, and now you're taking your first steps into a new world. You have the support of everyone from Held Bus Service. Congratulations, seniors, from the Held Bus Service in Kenyon.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. In that commercial message, they were talking about, it seems like just yesterday, this was happening, and now you're a senior and graduating. And here we go. From 1965, what do you think I'm going to play there, Glenn?
Pick one, and we'll see if I recognize it.
The number two song. This is the number two song in all of 1965. You
may lucky I remember anything from 1965.
Okay, I'm going to push the button. I'll look at you and see if you smile and know the name of this song. Hurry.
Yesterday.
Yes. There's the name. And the Beatles again.
Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
One of the most played songs ever in the world.
And still played a lot.
On elevators. You know, musical. Really good. But
and in grocery stores.
Yeah. You know what I do? When somebody says yesterday, I just in my head go, all my troubles seem so far away.
Why she had to go, I don't know.
The Beatles, number two in all of 1965 on Billboard's pop chart. And Glenn Caster is my guest here on Kim. And he just told me something I was never aware of. He was drafted by the United States Navy after he had a college education. And then he went to artillery school, which meant after he graduated from that, he immediately was made an officer, a second Louis. But he and many others quit, and then therefore they were no longer officers, but they were still in the Navy. But they
in the
had
Army, yes.
You had Navy, the Army. You still had stripes. You were one rocker or what?
Three, the lowest grade sergeant.
Lowest grade sergeant. Okay.
Three stripes.
And so that ended up doing what for you in 1969?
Well, Part of the time I spent at in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. That's the artillery school. And one of the things that was happening right at that time is in the artillery was they were switching over from using books with what are called firing tables to figure out how much powder and angles and elevations and so on. You take these books and go through a bunch of calculations. So they went from that to a computer that was about the size of a little electric piano. And so at Fort Sill was the first place they tried the computers. So we would practice with those. We would go out with an artillery unit and practice. And then I was sent to Vietnam with some computers to install in the what was called a demilitarized zone in several artillery bases.
DMZ.
In the DMZ. So I was there for about 6 weeks.
And computers were brand new.
They were brand new, and they were very awkward to use, but they were very fast.
Did you use pins to plug in different holes?
No. No. It was tailored to artillery use, you know, so you
would it print out what the results were, or did it come on a card and punch holes and then you put that in the cannon and you know, I mean,
well,
how basic was it?
Well, what happened was, so you would here's the computer, and you would have a place where you would punch in what's the air temperature, what altitude are you at, how far away. You know, are you shooting at something 5 miles away or 10 miles away? What kind of target is it? So you'd punch all these things in, and it would tell you, it would print out a little slip that says, here's the kind of shell you want to use, here's the powder charge, here's the instructions you give to the guy at the gun, you know, for elevation and so forth. And so you're still transmitting that over the radio to a gun unit.
What would they have different shell? Was it the same gun that they could use different shells with different amount of powder?
Yeah, yeah. So in these guns, you have a canister and you put stacks of powder in it, and you put a shell on it. Some shells are just a little bomb. Some of them have little bomblets in them that break out and explode, and you have a fuse that goes on the top that you set So those things get done, and you shove it into the gun and pull the lanyard.
It isn't like the movies, the actual firing of cannons in, let's say, Second World War, where somebody picks up a shell, puts it in, clasps his ears, and kind of ducks away and then picks up another one and puts it in by hand?
Well, no, it's very much like that. I mean, you're still picking it up and putting it in by hand, but you... In a sense, most of the time you construct the shell. There are shells that are all set to go also.
Yeah, so you must have a whole lot of shells around.
That's right.
Because they're going to tell you which ones are low with how much power.
Yep.
Well, I can see why they took you, because you were a mathematician. We will be back right after this final timeout.
It's time for the class of 2018 to turn the page and start the next chapter in their lives. And KYMN 95-1 is proud to team up with Capital Construction and REMAX Advantage Plus in Northfield to bring you the live broadcast of the Northfield graduation ceremony. That's this Sunday, June the 3rd at 2 o'clock on 95.1 FM, AM 1080, and streaming at kymnradio.net or on your mobile device on the TuneIn Radio app. The Northfield High School Commencement Ceremony, brought to you by REMAX Advantage Plus and Capital Construction, this Sunday on KYMN.
Have you ever thought, an adjustable mattress would be great, but why would I spend the money when my old mattress works perfectly fine? Well, America's Mattress and Furniture To Go in Dundas has an opportunity for you to start sleeping better than fine. Stop in this Memorial Day weekend and save up to $800 on Serta iComfort adjustable mattress sets, along with great savings on traditional mattress sets and 60-month interest-free financing. Come check out savings without high-pressure sales. America's Mattress and Furniture To Go in Dundas. See how relaxing furniture shopping can be.
Kenyon Ace Hardware in Kenyon would like to salute the Kenyon Wanamingo graduates and wish them well. For all your spring and summer needs, along with a full line of Ace and Valspar paints, Cub Cadet lawnmowers, fertilizer, and hardware, visit Kenyon Ace Hardware in Kenyon.
Good morning, and one more good morning. We are going to have to leave. It's 1.5 minutes before it is 11 o'clock, and guess what, sir? I have to ask if you can return, and we'll pick up from Vietnam and then go the rest of the way to Northfield.
We can do that sometime.
Okay. I appreciate that. But in the meantime, just for the fun of it, once again, Glenn Castor is my guest on KYMN. He is a supervisor for Bridgewater Township, and he's on the board of directors for the Northfield Fire and Rescue stuff. I've said on the air that this is one of my favorite songs of all time. I think I said it might have been number 5, 2, 1, or was it top 3? I don't know. Anyhow, you tell me what you think of this song. Well, and do you have any idea what the number 1 song was in 1965? Well, that isn't very satisfying.
No, these things fade away as years go by. Can't get no satisfaction with the Rolling Stones.
You got it. You like that one?
Oh, yeah.
Let's listen to it. Yeah. Again, thank you very much for joining us on 1080 KYMN Northfield, a friend you can count on, 95.1 FM.